You are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation, a national nonprofit founded on the belief that every pregnancy deserves a happy ending. Visit us online at starlegacyfoundation.org.
Welcome to another episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast. My name is Lindsay Wimmer, and I'm the Executive Director of the Star Legacy Foundation. It's my honor today to be joined by Dr. Elizabeth Minton. She's a professor at the University of Wyoming, and her specialty is in marketing. But her own experience with perinatal loss has brought her into this community of bereaved parents, and she's bringing her talents and skills into this community in a unique way. So, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here.
So as I mentioned, it's not uncommon for many people to kind of mold or meld their professional and personal experiences together. And we certainly see that in the loss community, where I'm an example myself, using what I've learned personally to kind of change or maybe influence some of the things that I do professionally. And you have done the same thing. So can you start by telling us just a little bit about your son, Sebastian, and how this all began for you?
Yeah. So I should say that I've been here at the University of Wyoming since 2014. And before my son, my research focused mostly on how to promote healthy and sustainable consumption. All good things. But your purpose in life changes a lot after you have a child and after you lose a child. So my son was born at the end of 2020. My pregnancy was completely normal, and we really enjoyed those first few weeks with him. I mean, enjoy in the total sleep-deprived state that a new parent is. And then 3 weeks later, he just suddenly died and stopped breathing. We still don't really know what happened to him, but our lives were completely turned upside down, to the point that I was like, I really feel like I can't go back to my job, because marketing is something that is important for our society in communicating information. But after you lose a child and you realize just the gravity of how much that impacts your life and how you feel like it's hard to even breathe and move forward one day, it's so hard to think about going back to work and telling people how to sell stuff, because it seems like it doesn't matter anymore in comparison to the value that life is. And that once that life is gone, it doesn't seem that important.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully said. You know, when I first, I'm hoping that I'm not alone, but when I first hear the word marketing, I immediately think of advertising and sales and those kinds of things. And so thinking about how taking a marketing perspective into this type of experience doesn't necessarily seem like an automatic fit to me. But you were able to address this really nicely at the Stillbirth Summit where you presented this summer. Can you describe a little bit about what actually marketing is and how you do combine the two experiences?
Absolutely. And I should also mention that, so after my son died, it was many months of just purely in the grief space. Until counseling was so helpful for me. And we talked about how do I make sense of where my career is and where all my education is, and the potential of trying to merge that with this new space that I'm in and I'm so passionate about. So that's what led me actually to do the research that I do today. So with regards to marketing, as I mentioned earlier, marketing is really about communicating information. And I think a lot of people just think marketing is the advertisements they see on TV or in magazines or on social media. But advertising is just one tiny little component of what marketing is. We often define marketing in terms of 4 P's, which is the product. So think about like all the packaging and the branding and everything that entails in that. The price that it sells for and what consumers want to pay for it, the placement, so where do consumers see it or where can they buy it, and then promotion is only one quarter of it, and advertising is only a subset of promotion, because there's lots of other things besides advertising. So I just say that to think, like, advertising, yes, it is part of marketing, but it is not all of marketing. And marketing is used for selling for for-profit brands. It's also used for nonprofits. Just the same way as Star Legacy Foundation, in order to get their name out, they have to engage in marketing for people to hear about them. And the means by that are very different. But so the question is, well, how does this all relate to bereaved parents? And so one question that I have, based upon personal experience, is that after my son died, I continued getting things in the mail. And it would say, oh, you know, congratulations on your son. He's now X number of months old. And I would call up these companies and say, I don't want to receive this anymore. And they would respond back to me, well, there's a 6 to 8 week mailing list that we've already pre-designed. And so you'll have to wait 8 weeks for it to stop. And I would see back, my son died. Like, you can't, there has to be a way to interrupt this system. And then I would look on social media and I would get these ads that would say, how many kids do you have? And I sat there thinking, how do I even respond to this question? Like, how? Is this a present tense question? Like, I don't know. My son is not living with me at the present moment, but I definitely consider myself a mother. And so do I answer one and say that he's living, or do I answer none and negate his life? And I was so confused. And I started to realize that marketing really does influence what we think of ourselves as parents. And it has opportunities to validate the identities of our children and also invalidate them by excluding them. And I was curious, as you mentioned, that is this just my experience or do other people feel this way? So that's what led me into my research of trying to identify if there's others that feel the same way that I do.
I think so many people can probably relate to exactly some of those experiences that you just shared, because I know so many families have commented on different things that, you know, through different channels that have been communicated to them. And it really does kind of change how they see themselves, because they start looking at them through the way that the rest of the world looks at them. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your research and what you have been finding.
Yeah, so I have two publications fully accepted now, which I'm very excited about, and several others that are at various stages of the review process. My first publication was in the Journal of Death and Dying, and it was looking at advice from bereaved parents directly to other bereaved parents. So I conducted roughly 30 interviews in the United States and another almost equivalent sample in New Zealand. The purpose there is they have a very different perspective on death in New Zealand and caring for the bereaved right after death, even allowing many people to take their babies home with them for several days before cremation or burial or anything that happens after that, which in the United States is a very taboo process. So I was just curious how death perspectives differ between those cultures. But in that first paper, I asked every one of my participants, what advice would you have to a newly bereaved parent? And so that was really the premise of that whole paper. And a lot of it was about self-care. A lot of it was about don't let anyone else's expectations be placed upon you, because you can grieve in whatever way you need to grieve. They mentioned the importance of reaching out and finding community of other people that have been through it before. And they also mentioned the idea that people that are trying to support the bereaved, that it's really important to keep saying the name of the baby that has passed. Because a lot of times what happens is there's so much support initially, and then over time that support wanes. And so it's like your child still exists maybe for 3 or 6 months afterwards. It feels like that. But then a year, 2 years, 3 years on down the line, that child no longer exists. So even just that simple thing of putting a reminder in your calendar that sends you an email every year at the date of that baby's passing, and sending an email or a note or a card to them and saying, hey, I'm just remembering that child's name, and keeping saying that. So that was really the premise of that first paper. And then the second paper that's published right now is in the Qualitative Health Research Journal. And that one really is about the stigmatization process that occurs. So these first two were less than the marketing angle and more just kind of the bereavement journey. But that paper looks in part about how marketing contributes to stigmatization. So if we think about any portrayal of families in the media, you really never see a bereaved family. a bereaved family in the sense that they have lost a child. You really just never see that portrayed. And so it produces the stigma or expectation that parents don't lose children. And so we look at the different influences that can change that trajectory for a bereaved parent, whether it be community groups that step in to say, no, it is okay to feel this way, or this does happen. So breaking that taboo or that stigma. We look at the practices that parents engage in to try to keep the identity of their child alive. Even things like one of my parents was going on a vacation and they packed a bag for their deceased child. And they put all the things in there that they would normally take to that child, and they went on the vacation with them to feel like they still had that child with them. And so this identifying some of these practices that are occurring helps others know how to support them and helps others know what can be expected. And to say, this is not odd, this is not weird, this is just trying to cope with one of the greatest tragedies you can experience in life. And we kind of look at the end how everyone has this desire to do something with what they've been through. And the way that that looks is very different. Obviously, for you, starting an organization is a very huge thing that occurred out of that. For some people, it's just always wanting to share their story to make others feel like they're not isolated. So it's little tiny things that you can do after the loss of a child to just make your child's passing have some kind of significance and some kind of positive impact in the world.
I think the stigma is something that probably most bereaved parents can relate to. Either it's been, you know, implied or directly said or told to them in some way that their grief is not something that the rest of the world wants to deal with. And that obviously really does have a role to play in all this. And I think it's amazing when I think about that stigma and some of the, as you mentioned, the taboos that exist around this, just because our society doesn't like to talk about death, particularly the death of babies and young children. And so there really is an awareness and a communications role in helping support families, because it just adds to their grief sometimes when they feel like they have to do it alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And then I'll just extend from there. So I have two papers under review or advanced stages of review right now in marketing journals. One paper is focused more specifically on the advertising element. And now you should be familiar with what advertising is and how it differs from marketing as a broad perspective. And that paper really looks at how can we integrate the bereaved into advertising in ways that the bereaved feel are respectful and in ways that the general community feel are respectful as well. And so that's from this qualitative data. And then we also partnered with a local business that supports this mission and helped to run some advertising and to see how consumers responded to that. And basically the general gist of that whole paper is that people really love to see it. They feel like the company is more compassionate and warm and friendly and relatable when they share information about this. And it's just things like we have books on all sorts of topics, including child loss, or just mentioning something like that. Or we're valuing all parents during the holiday season, those who have living children and those whose children are no longer living. Little tiny things like that. We also ran an ad saying that if you have a child, come in with your child and we'll give you 50% off a book. Or if your child's no longer living, bring something that reminds you of them and share the story of them. And so, again, it's just giving you this compassionate feeling from a business that genuinely wants to share that, acknowledges that bereavement occurs, and makes bereaved parents feel included. And the purpose there, I just really want to emphasize, is not to sell, not to make money off of the bereaved. Absolutely not. And we really emphasize that ethical implication in our paper. It's really to say, how can we make the bereaved feel included?
How have some of these concepts and topics been perceived by maybe the marketing world or some of these businesses that you're working with, where people may not have had personal experience or as much exposure to this topic?
That's a good question. I'm smiling right now because It's been a process. And I know that you understand, and any bereaved parent out there understands how some people just don't get it. And it takes a while for you to, I don't want to say sell them on the idea, but convince them of the importance of the topic. And for some reason, the numbers alone oftentimes aren't enough. And so I've gotten responses at journals that say it doesn't matter. And that hurts me so much. From a personal standpoint, obviously, I'm very personally invested in this research, but also from a broader standpoint of saying, how does this not matter? And I mean, maybe that's me not communicating it clearly enough in my writing, but it just matters. I mean, look at the sheer numbers. And if you think about some of the research that we're doing in marketing or in other fields, and the very small minority populations that we're studying, and that apparently matters, but child loss does not matter. Yet we look at the statistics, and if we incorporate all different levels of child loss, all the way up to adult child loss, we're at almost 1 in 3. And so there's no way that you can say it doesn't matter. So that's like my soapbox right there, which I am working on telling people on the importance of it, because yes, it matters, and it matters in marketing for those examples that I provided, and so many more reasons too.
So what suggestions do you have for bereaved families that maybe encounter some of their own challenges or barriers in talking about their baby or sharing that experience, communicating that the importance of their child in their life, even if their child is no longer with them, in the physical sense? How does that communication translate into a personal level?
Yeah, I want to first say for the people that are supporting the bereaved, because I feel like, at least for myself and many of the participants that I interviewed, initially, it's hard to communicate what you need, because you're just not sure what you need in those initial periods of grief. And that's when the supportive people around need to say, does this feel good? And to offer some different solutions and ask how it feels. Don't ask the question, what can I do for you? Because a lot of bereaved parents initially don't know what they need. So rather you could say, can I bring you a meal tomorrow night? Or does it feel good when I say the name of your child? Someone recently asked me, does it feel good for me to acknowledge what year in school they would be in? And for some people that may feel good, and for some people that may not feel good. So ask those questions. But for the bereaved, I would say, if you are receiving marketing, so you're getting those samples in the mail, you can put return to sender on them and put them right back in the mail. And that's a sign to the company that you don't want it anymore. And it requires very little emotional investment on your part just to write return to sender. And sometimes if you use a big black marker and write that, it can feel really good just to like put something in actual visual and put it back in the mailbox. Unsubscribing from emails is another thing to do. Or if someone asks you the general question, what can I do? Please just go into my email box and unsubscribe from everything so I don't have to see it, and ask someone else to help you with that. I would, once you are a bereaved parent, you feel like you're at the point where you know a little bit more about what feels good, I think just talking to people and using your child's name. And if they say, oh, I didn't want to bring that up because I thought that would hurt you, and say no, tell them what you want. Do you want them to say your child's name? Does that feel really good to you? Does it help for them to reach out on milestone dates and to share that with other people? And that can really help to maintain that sense of identity. Little things like when you're writing holiday cards, sign their name on the card, anything where you're making their name visible and part of you. I've seen some people included on email signatures, which may be appropriate or not, depending on where your work or whether it's your personal email. Having a little space in your house for that child that's physical representation. There's lots of little things that you can do to keep that memory alive and to share your story, because there's so many people that live under this stigma and taboo and don't tell anybody. And you sharing your story may allow them to experience the voice of their child that they never have before.
I think those are amazing and very practical words of wisdom. In a similar vein, what suggestions do you have for those who may be part of, you know, businesses or organizations that do engage or interact with bereaved parents, which really could be anybody, because we know that there's more bereaved parents out there than we may realize at times. But so many times organizations will ask us how as we as an entity can help to make those parents feel supported and included. What would recommendations would you have for them?
I think around the holidays are some of the most important times to remember those children. So even as I mentioned with those, that advertising that we're testing right now around the holidays, saying that we're wishing everyone a happy Thanksgiving, whether you have all of your family at the table or you have children at heart that are going, their memories are going to be relished at the table. And just little things to acknowledge that. We've also identified that there's the perception sometimes that corporations are these kind of like, I don't know, non-emotional entities. And so if there is anyone in an organization that has lost a child, having those communications come from that person and that person also sharing their story can mean more to a bereaved parent, as they feel like it's more authentic what the organization is sharing. I'd also say that if you have company sign-up forms that are asking how many children that someone has, to allow a write-in box and to say, tell me about your family, and allowing the person to share more than just a number, because that can allow them to feel like they are being included. And it can also allow you as an organization to get more accurate information about what is actually going on. Other things that are important are during certain holidays like Mother's Day and Father's Day are some of the hardest holidays because they are specifically targeted toward parents. And there are a few companies right now, and I'd like to see this on a much larger scale, that are allowing opting out of those communications. And so I'd really encourage an organization during those specific holidays to allow the consumer to be opted out of those, or even opting out while opting into a separate set of communications that are specifically for someone that is bereaved. And maybe it talks about self-care tips or offers opportunities to share a picture of the child that someone lost, or even their mother that they lost, because you can think about Mother's and Father's Day as hard for either way, and allowing kind of the relishing of memories during that time. So I like to think of my research as not just suggesting stop doing everything family related, because a business is like, well, why should I care? Because you're just taking away the target market. But what I am saying is stop doing these actions that are hurtful and start doing these actions that validate the identity of the baby or the person that has been lost. And so I hope that that's helpful to provide a few ideas. I hope my research will be published soon with my broader marketing paper, and then I can share that. And there is a much broader set of ideas in there.
Well, those are all just very exciting and wonderful things that hopefully all of our listeners can really just put into practice in the small and big ways that they may have those opportunities in their lives. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. And we have been sharing some of the papers that you've had published, and we will continue to do so. For anyone who has not heard Elizabeth's presentation from the Stillbirth Summit that was held in June of 2023, I absolutely recommend taking a listen to it. You can find it on the Star Legacy website. We are so honored to have her expertise and her skill set contributing to how we support lost families. And it's an honor to be kind of contributing and doing what we can to help promote the work that she's doing.
Yes, and thank you so much for all that you all do for lost families and just bringing a voice and bringing community to these individuals that did not have it before.
Well, I think your work has highlighted that there's so much to be done, and it's going to take all of us. So thank you for working with us and so many other people, and hopefully we'll be able to continue these conversations for many years into the future.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you again, Dr. Elizabeth Minton from the University of Wyoming. And thank you all for taking this time to listen to the Stillbirth Matters podcast. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. Contact us at info@starlegacyfoundation.org to share feedback, request support, or suggest topics or guests for future podcast episodes.